The Virginia Voice presents What's Your Story? Our program is based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell. All you have to do is ask. Now, here's the host of What's Your Story, Jim Mork.
Hello, and welcome to What's Your Story? My name is Jim Mork, and I'll be your host for this edition of the Virginia Voice program that proves that everyone has a story to tell. Today's story comes from a gentleman who is very well known to Richmond radio listeners. That's Tim Timberlake. Tim is best known as the longtime WRVA radio personality who Richmonders invited into their homes for decades. In many ways, Tim's career at WRVA mirrors the golden age of Richmond radio, back when Tim and his broadcast partner, Alden Arrow, were among the most trusted voices found in local media. Tim Timberlake, welcome to Virginia Voice.
Jim Mork, God bless you. It's great to be with you. As always, we go way back, and I'm proud to know that you are doing such good work with this organization now. You found a good spot to use your formidable skills and your good nature and your heart. So I'm glad to be here as your guinea pig here today to chat a bit.
Well, that's right, Tim, and thank you so much for being that guinea pig. What our radio listeners probably realize is this is the first What's Your Story edition I've ever hosted. And so I'm honored that I could have someone that I think is going to be so interesting to our listeners. Technologies and platforms come and go, but here we are still on radio, broadcasting through the air. Yeah. Why do you think it's such an important medium to so many people like us?
It's personal, I think. It's just a one-on-one conversation. I think I remember the very first job I had in Stanton up in the Valley when I was in high school, my program director admonishing me, "Hello, everybody out there in radio land. It's not that. You're talking to one person at a time."
Right.
And so that whole notion is what you kind of work toward to get to that point where you can feel like you're just being conversational with someone and trying to impart some information or relate to them in some way or resonate with them in some way and make it that one-on-one conversation. And that's why I think, like you say, despite all the technology and all the platforms that are out there in media and social media now, it's still basically the same sort of thing. However that voice gets across, it's still just you talking with somebody else.
Well, you know, it makes me think about as a kid when I was growing up. You know, we're about the same age. I think we both grew up in the golden age of AM radio and rock and roll. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and there was a fast-talking AM rock and roll DJ, a guy named Jerry Blavitt.
Jerry Blavitt,
you know about him? Well, I was the kid with the little transistor radio under my pillow.
Absolutely.
You know, when I was supposed to be going to bed, I was listening to Jerry playing Platters and Matter.
I was listening to Cousin Brucey on ABC or listening to Dick Summer on WBC in Boston. I mean, those 50-kilowatt stations like WRVA ended up being, well, I mean, was then too.
Yes.
But those voices from the miles had such a romantic link to them, to explore worlds that you never knew about, hear music that you would never have otherwise heard, and it was definitely a huge inspiration, I guess, for all of us. And I guess that's, you know, kind of what led me to want to do this. And I thought, man, this is pretty fun.
Well, right in the right neighborhood, because I wanted to take you back in time. I mentioned Jerry Blavitt, and there were others, but it was like you talking about this one-on-one, you know, it's a very intimate medium, isn't it? I felt like this guy who was playing all these great records for me was like a friend. And I'm wondering, you already mentioned a couple of voices, were there voices that you could still hear in your ear that you grew up with as a young radio listener who inspired you? And did it actually make you think, even at a young age, that this is the kind of thing I might want to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think hearing it and knowing how much of an impact that it had, somebody like I mentioned Dick Summer on WBZ in Boston, who had this really warm, soothing voice, and he would read poems. He would read The Highwayman and would set them to music. And Lou Dean, the same way Lou would play these great show tunes and do travelogues. And I first heard WRVA by listening to Lou, like you say, with the little transistor radio in my bedroom in Stanton when I was, you know, before high school, actually. So those voices just get in your head and take you places. And, you know, I just figured, well, I set up a little radio station in my basement, just a regular turntable, the kind that used to stack LPs and I would learn to cue them up, and I bought a little Heath kit thing where I could transmit into my radio in the kitchen in a different part of the house, you know, and play radio before I got an actual job at WTON when I was a sophomore, I think, in high school.
Well, we're going to talk about those days, but I just had this image of what you just said. Made me chuckle a little bit. Uh-huh. While the rest of the kids were jumping around the living room with tennis rackets pretending they were the Beatles, you playing were the kid that guitar. Was pretending you were playing the Beatles records on the radio, uh-huh. weren't you?
Yeah, well, actually, I was on the radio during the Beatles when they were happening out in high school. My first radio job was 65, so I actually did get to play Beatles, and I was doing a radio show on Saturday nights playing Top 40 stuff.
I was hoping you'd walk us through your time on radio. Where did it all start? You know, was it a job interview? How do you get into radio?
It was in Stanton, and we were there. My dad worked at Mary Baldwin College, and he knew that I was interested in radio because I'd set this little thing up, and I'd built the little transmitter kit. My dad knew Charlie Blackley, who was the head of WTON at that time, the general manager and the owner. And apparently a Sunday morning slot came open, and they asked if I would come down and read for it. Sunday mornings playing, segueing religious tapes and Montavani records and ripping, reading a newscast or two. It was at least a five-hour shift on Sunday mornings. So that was when I started doing that. I had to go get a third-class radio telephone engineer's license that you had to go to D.C. to take a test and so forth. Neat. And that's what you had to do back then.
Because
you were running the transmitter, too. I think most stations don't really have people doing that anymore, I don't think. I mean, but that back in the day, that was what most people who were in radio, certainly smaller stations, would have to do.
So you're picking the music. You're running the console.
Well,
are you your own weatherman? Are you doing traffic? Are you your own newsman?
I would have to rip a copy off the AP and put it together and do newscasts. And this grew into doing that, and then I got the fun part was for my last couple of years in high school, I got to do a Saturday night. It was a middle of the road adult station, similar to what RBA was during most of the time that it played music, that sort of format.
Right.
Adult contemporary or, you know, more traditional than that, really. But I got to play Top 40 stuff. I got to play the hits on Saturday nights for like 3 hours.
What years are we talking about?
This would have been from 66 and 67.
Truly the golden age of hit record radio.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was definitely fun. And we actually took it out on the road and played at the National Guard Armory. We'd take a remote setup and we did it live in quite a few occasions. Most of the time it was in the studio, but a lot of times we'd take it out and have record hops. And so, you know, that gets you get a taste of that. For being
how old were you? You're a kid.
Well, I was sophomore, junior, senior in high school.
Oh,
so I was
wow. What brought you to WRVA, and how did you hook up with Alden? Was that your first assignment, or did it evolve into morning show?
When I graduated from high school in Stanton, our family moved to Richmond, and I got into Randolph-Macon, and that's what brought me here, really. I got into Randolph-Macon and started there in 67, maybe 68. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but sure. I was there through 71, and so I was looking for a job in Richmond, and I first went to RBA, and I auditioned there.
Great.
And got turned down.
Wow.
Need more experience. The audition material they gave you to read was just fraught with, you know, with verbal
landmines.
Landmines. Good. Thank you. Just ridiculous stuff that you had to try to pronounce. But anyway, right. So I was definitely green, and they told me to come back, so I got a job at WRGM, actually, up there on Wilkinson Road. It's a station that is at 1540 on the AM dial, and it was also a middle of the road. Yeah, it was late 60s, uh-huh, and so I worked there for a year or so, then got asked back to re-audition at RVA after about a year and a half at WRGM. This was all during college. I was doing this part-time during school.
Mm-hmm.
I was a terrible student at college. I squandered my academics there just because I just wanted to do radio, and I just wanted to take courses and get a degree. I didn't care what I was taking or anything.
I was
terrible.
Sure, sure.
I just had this thing. So Alden was kind of the program director back then. So Alden hired me then.
Was he already on? I'm sorry, Tim. Was he already on in the mornings? Was
yes.
Alden on? Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So this was already the number one show in Richmond, I'm guessing.
Yeah. He and Harvey Hudson had a good rivalry for many years mm-hmm. when and Harvey was on W. Lee and Alden on RVA, and there were times when one was ahead and one was the other.
Name that our listeners probably remember very fondly.
Absolutely. So anyway, Alden hired me part-time. I did basically swing work or fill-ins. I did mm-hmm. weekends. I did substitute stuff when somebody was on vacation and did a little music directing and so forth. And then in 74, that's when that tragic helicopter crash that killed Howard Bloom and the pilot Walter Cottrell and the kid whose house the thing crashed into in May of 1974. It was, you know, just a horrible day for all of us. But a month later, they made the decision to go ahead and keep the traffic copter service going. And since I had been the sub for Howard for a year or two, they offered me the job, and I took it, being fatalistic and feeling like, well, you know, it's more dangerous driving to the airport than flying a helicopter technically or statistically. So I was young then and felt like, okay, so I'll do this for 4 years, as it turned out. Four years I did that from 74 to 78 and retired, actually, from RBA in 78.
Oh, it was...
I left and went and did country for a little while mm-hmm. at Wheat and actually WRNL for a little bit, too.
Right.
But Wheat is what was my entree into all the bluegrass and the musicians around here and nationally that I've gotten to be very fond of over all these decades since that time. But then I went back to RVA, if you want to continue that thread.
I do.
I'm really sorry.
And I want to hear a little bit more about what it was like to work with Alden, too, as a person. And
well,
I know you two became very close, of course.
Well, of course. I was with him a lot more than I was with my family, really, in terms of one-on-one time.
Sure.
For sure. And Jim Jacobs called him the Big Swede, and he was not Swedish. He was Danish, actually.
Okay.
A-A-R-O-E was a...
Right.
But it was just this larger-than-life personality. He could relate to anyone, whether he was the guy who was, you know, picking up your trash down the street mm-hmm. to the governor or the president, as we were able to arrange a phone call on his 80th birthday with Ronald Reagan back then, which was one of the highlights of our career.
Yeah.
But Alden, everybody related to Alden because he just told them what they needed to know and did it in a very warm way. It was accessible mm-hmm. to everyone, regardless of kind of what their upbringing or ethnicity was. I mean, so many people just related to him in such a real way, and he taught me a lot about that whole thing of just trying to be real with people.
You mentioned President Ronald Reagan, and as you mentioned it, his name, it was interesting in the same breath as Alden Arrow, because mm-hmm. Reagan became known as the Great Communicator, there's a real connection there, isn't there, in a way? Because that's what people felt about Alden, is mm-hmm. talk about that intimate relationship. I mean, I know when I first came and started to listen here in Richmond, it really did feel like he was just talking to me, you know, like it was just a couple of guys having a cup of coffee and telling me what I needed to know that morning. Was there a difference?
The whole school thing was interesting because that was really kind of everybody. I mean, we owned the market back then when it was a snow day because we had developed this elaborate system with all sort of fail-safe security devices in there where people had to have codes to call in so nobody could call in and bogus close a school without it being authorized and so forth. So it got to the point on a snow day, they were really fun. And of course, we really had to get to work. I don't care how bad the weather was.
Yeah,
I mean, that was when we really had to be there
this. You and Alden and whoever was working that board would be falling into the category of essential personnel.
Yes.
To Richmonders, I think.
And I will say, I'm proud of this because I always ran my own board. And I stuck with that until I retired in 2001 because I wanted, that was part of the fun of it for me, is to actually have my fingers on the keyboard, basically, to have on the console, to be able to bring in all these little elements. And that technical part of it was as fun for me as what I was having to say. But my point about the school thing was mm-hmm. it got to be such a huge thing, and RVA, it was the go-to. But now, all of it's changed so much because you have television. Television is so much the morning ritual for people now, and they are able to impart all that information while they can go on with their regular programming mm-hmm. with a little crawl across the bottom of the screen and all of the information, or on the internet, of course. But back then, we had to read the list. And on a busy day, we'd finish the list. We'd have to start all over again. Sure. That's all we did all morning is read the list.
Reading the list was like painting the Brooklyn Bridge. By the time you got to the end of it, it was time to start at the beginning
again. Exactly right.
Well, that's really interesting. Well, another question about Alden, and then I want to move on a little bit. But was there a different Alden Arrow off the air?
No.
I'm asking about Alden, your friend now, not the broadcaster.
I understand. No, not really. I mean, I will say that there were people like John Harding and Chuck Noe, who was there for a good while, great sportscaster, who's also passed. John's still with us. He's down in Emporia, very gifted photographer now, doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
But John was my, partner. He was on during Alden's term with me at doing the news, and also the voice of Millard Mallard, which another aspect.
You mentioned him, yeah.
Well, right. Well, John's double-sided personality to be a distinctive, renowned and respected newsman, right, and the voice of a duck was a wonderful paradox that he enjoyed keeping, that secret, and we did too for all those years. But I was going to say, those people I mentioned had more of a social relationship with Alden. I was a little younger than they.
Right, sure.
I was raising our family, our Deborah and our two kids. I didn't see him as much beyond our just getting down and getting to work in the morning every day. So we didn't have a real close social kind of relationship like some of these other folks did. But he was always very generous, very supportive, very, just all the things that you would want to have a colleague that you're engaged with in such a closed, tight way.
Right.
He was it. He was as good as you get.
That's really interesting, Tim, and it's great to hear about Alden, the person, not just Alden the broadcaster. I bet you did a lot of personal appearances with him out in the community. What was when you'd go out into the world and meet people face to face?
I did so many, parades. We had a costume, that we would put one of our staffers in to be Millard. So the three of us would go out to. I would do parades and do remotes where you're selling cars or furniture or whatever.
Or dry cleaning or whatever.
Anything. And so many things like that. And everybody would just love, coming up and meeting him and getting a hug from Millard. And there were times where you felt like, oh, my gosh, another remote here. You have to spend 4 hours of your Saturday grilling hot dogs schmoozing and so forth when you would rather be home cutting the grass or whatever. But that's part of the deal. And I think radio, I guess they still do stuff like that.
They still have
remotes and all that. I will say that I'm really glad after 16 years of doing mornings, half those with Alden and half those after he passed away.
Sure.
I am so, so glad that I don't have to do it anymore.
Well, being a DJ, especially a morning person, especially on a popular show like that, much less the most popular show, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. I mean, you're living a life that is really being formed by what you do for a living in a lot of ways.
No, you're absolutely right. And you do, I look back on it now and thinking of those 16 years where it was a lot of intensity and a lot of hard work and really crazy hours and sleep deprivation and all that.
Sure.
When you were doing it, it was fine. Once I'd hit the shower in the morning, boom.
Right,
I was
ready to roll.
I was on. I was ready to go. And you just sort of slip into those shoes, and that's what you do. You don't really think about, oh, man, really? I mean, there's some mornings where you feel like,
sure you do.
Not this one. Because a lot of times I'd drive up to the Birchmere in D.C. to go see a show on a school night and then drive home and go straight to work sometimes just because I wanted to do it so much.
Right.
And you sleep when you're dead.
We've got some time left, and what I'd like to do is explore your life since you left the airwaves, which I think people who grew up listening to you out there in our Virginia Voice audience are going to be interested in. Many of our listeners may not know that you're an aficionado of bluegrass music, old time, and all styles that are, kind of music. And it's interesting to me that you got into radio because of your love of music, and here you are pursuing your love of music, this umbrella of music called Americana. But really, you're more than a fan. Tim is really recognized nationally as an expert in many ways in this kind of music. Tell us about your involvement. What are you out there doing? And you're doing more than enjoying the music. You're promoting it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, this is my way of being a musician that I've never had the tenacity to become by trying to share music with people that I, you know, that resonates with me. So, no, yeah, I finished RVA in 2001. Just a quick aside, I was very fortunate to get connected with Bon Secours Health Systems in St. Mary's Hospital, and Peter Bernard hired me to be kind of the voice of Bon Secours, which I had a great run of, you know, 10 to 12 years doing that, which was a really wonderful foundation
right.
for me to have as a freelancer.
And it was everything from commercial work, but also even their in-house telephone systems.
Yeah,
and
just
every aspect.
Pretty extensive thing.
Yeah,
so I did a lot of commercials, sort of informational medical commercials, which were medical matters for a while. So that gave me a platform of sort of a steady income to let me get into some of these other nonprofit pro bono things that I'm still involved with primarily, including Jam Inc., which is our nonprofit, and we do concerts, school outreach with the artists we bring to our concerts at down at In Your Ear Recording. I am a stage manager and MC at a lot of festivals like Merlefest and Graves Mountain and Red Wing Roots up in the Shenandoah Valley and IBMA, which is the International Bluegrass Music Association, other festivals around the country that I enjoy going and being involved, again, vicariously, hanging out with musicians and hearing great music live. You know, there's nothing like it. And so I'm doing that. For the past 5 or 6 years, I've gotten to do, for part of the year, an hour show on Saturdays on WCVE called In Your Ear, which is material from these live concerts that
right.
Jam Inc. puts on down at the studio that happens to be named In Your Ear. So it's kind of confusing in that regard. But we do folk, blues, bluegrass, jazz music, and so I package those concerts, recordings that we have, into hour-long radio shows. And we've done 47 hour-long shows that are still running. We run in the fall, and then we run in the spring when the opera is not on Saturdays. That's
right.
when we run.
Get preempted by the opera. That's
yeah,
okay,
that's
though.
Okay. And so that creates the slot that gives
yep.
us. They need us, and we need, and they're letting us run
nice.
The show. But it's also on the website. People can listen to those shows on demand anytime. Just go to ideastations.org/IYE, and all 47 of those shows are up there, so they can. So I'm still doing radio to that extent now.
Well, Jam Inc. is a really wonderful charity, and just like Virginia Voice is.
Sure.
Different mission, of course, but Jam Inc. is terrific. Is there any way that people that are listening now can help with Jam Inc.? Do you have a website or for
yeah,
more information?
Yeah, absolutely we do, and that's where people can see about our upcoming shows and a little bit about our mission, which is opening minds, hearts, and ears to music deserving a wider audience through education, performance, and support. Wally Thulin started this organization 15 years ago, and Daniel Clark, Jim Bland, Andy Garrigue, I'm trying
yep.
to think of our board members, Justin Lauder. We've had a lot of different people through there that have been on our board, but we try to do these concerts, bring artists who are kind of under the mainstream radar to town to perform in a really intimate space, and then we take them out to perform for public and private school kids. And we've served, we keep a count on how many kids are in the audience every time we do a school show, and we're up to 80,000 now.
Wow. Now, Tim, we've got time for about one more question.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about something that may outweigh everything else we've talked about in this past half hour, because there's something else we have in common, and I think we share it in common with a lot of our listeners. We're both grandparents, aren't we?
Oh.
Well, my name's Pop-Pop. I don't know if you're a Pop-Pop or what you are, but
Pops.
Why don't you tell us.
I am Pops.
And I know people are smiling already listening to this.
Well, it is a life-changing thing, and I think those of us who have achieved that place in the universe that is grandparenthood, you know, certainly relate. It's just a joy to see one of your children start another generation going on. So our daughter, inconveniently for us, moved to Portland when she got married, and so she'd been out there for 4 or 5 years. Rowan was born a year and a half ago, it'll be 2 years in July, and he is, you know, a little dreamboat. Of course he is. I mean, he's just all those. Everybody's kid is the most perfect, beautiful, you know, little guy.
And they're all true.
It's all true. But it has created an interesting dynamic for us because we live part-time in Portland. Now we have a little tiny apartment out there. We just couldn't think about only being out there for a week or two a year. So, yeah, it's a pretty special thing to be able to watch these little people and have less responsibility for them, but have this incredible, you know, revival of your parental feelings. I mean, just
well put.
I mean, you just you get to go run through it again and appreciate it a whole lot more.
All the fun stuff and none of the mess.
There you go.
Well, Tim, we're about out of time. I'm so glad we got to talk about that, and what a wonderful note to end on it. I've been a musician, I've been a teacher, I work now at Virginia Voice. It's a wonderful calling.
Yep.
But I think the pop gig, it's the role. It's really the role I was born to play, and I get the feeling the same with you, Tim.
It's pretty fun. He does like me. He said he hollers, he talks to me and drops my name all the time, even when I'm not there with it. Makes me feel very good. So, yeah, it's a good gig for sure.
Well, Tim, from Stanton, Virginia, to WRVA, to Jam Inc., to being Pops, and all points in between, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Timberlake. You could still find Tim, go out to the Richmond Folk Festival, and you're likely to see him doing some stage announcing. You know, tune in to Jam Inc., learn a little bit more about them through your computers. But I'll close by just thanking you, Tim, and telling our listeners you've been listening to What's Your Story on Virginia Voice, where people just like you connect by listening. I'm Jim Wark. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy. It's a treat being with you. Thank you.
Likewise.